This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
How would you describe what's happened to you today?
Best day of my life. To come here, you know, for the first time, obviously captain Aston Villa and scored a winner, you know, it's what dreams are made of, especially for me being an Aston Villa fan.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. And joining me, two people who have also had the greatest days of their life. Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com and also Chris Burt. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good evening. What a fine evening this is.
God, I'm smug. I'm so smug.
Was it the best day of your life, like Jackie Boy?
It's probably the best Sunday I've had in the last week.
Where I went to Crufts on Friday, and that was probably the best day of my life.
What a lad.
Well, come on. Crufts came to Birmingham in 1991, and it's now a bastion of Brummyland. So what better way to spend a weekend than one day at Crufts, and then obviously the Sunday, biggest game in the area. And my heart was full of joy after that Friday. I was there from 10 to 8 p.m.
Wow. That's a lot of time with dogs.
It was so good. I could really get into the details of different breeds and tell you, you know, who I met and why I was there. But
I could do the same thing with my trip to Amsterdam, but it would be a different kind of discussion around breeds.
I think we're just going to have this more of a match reaction rather than a long rambling podcast. Mm. So obviously the Blues derby. Oh, by the way, send me a tweet if you want to see some pictures from Crufts. if you're a dog lover, just
send
me a
tweet if you want to see any pictures from. Probably shouldn't.
Dan Rogers' dark social life. Anyway, coming up in the show, we will have a quick 3 points to get straight into the meat and gravy of what transpired at St. Andrews. And
did anything happen?
Normally these games are nasty, but this one, the script was all about we wanted to see some fucking justice in 90 minutes. And we got it. I mean, if it finished a draw or something, it would have been a bitter, bitter taste in the mouth. Mm. But it built up nicely for a good old Hollywood ending. Mm-hmm. We also have the Scott Hogan touch count meter. And after discussing the game and the incidents, and there's obviously a bit of a spill off from the assault that spark the game into life. We'll also just briefly end by looking at what we have to do before the international break to make sure we actually enjoy that international break. Anyway, let's get on with the 3 points. First one, Mr. Rogers.
The firing of Big Darren Moore. Our other neighbours from across this fine part of the world have seen fit to sack their manager whilst fourth in the league, with the second best away form, second most goals scored, as they approach a financial chasm. West Bromwich Albion, ladies and gentlemen, are in the midst of, I think, making some awfully, awfully familiar mistakes to the ones that we made.
If you look at the last six teams to get relegated from the Premier League, West Brom are the highest placed.
Mm-hmm.
And as you just said, only Norwich have outscored them and have a better away record. And I think, as I said on Twitter, I'd put money on them getting in the playoffs. And what you need in the playoffs is very good away form, because if you're successful, two of your three games are away from home. So a bit of a strange one, I thought there. And if you don't have faith in Darren Moore now, when he's fourth and at least going to get in the playoffs, then surely you didn't have faith in him in the first place.
Mm.
I don't get it.
Well, I suppose on the one hand, it is about, if you do draw with Paul Lambert, then that is the punishment. On the one hand,
yeah.
It is a fitting punishment.
Instant sacking.
I don't make the rules, but I think it's just another antsy Chinese owner who's kind of hit the panic button, hasn't he, from the looks of it?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think what Dan has just said, I think it's the, I think they call it the Lambert syndrome. I think if Dean Smith hadn't beaten Ipswich, he'd have been a goner as well in the recent clash. Anyway, let's move on to point number two, which was actually a point in the last podcast. The app that was hoped would be able to allow its own AFC would allow, they kind of build it as investors. So people would spend £49 and become an investor in a club and have a share, but really they're just customers. They don't have a stake in the club, and it would be £49 to sign up. We discussed it as a potential way of helping finance grassroots, and it suddenly derailed and unfurled very swiftly because Twitter account, social media account suddenly disappeared. People started to research the guy behind it and allegedly found him. He had opened several companies over the last decade, closed them pretty quickly, filed for bankruptcy once, and without getting too into the details, had a bit of a dubious record. And their attitude of how they dealt with people, for example, somebody was trying to claim his money back and they were saying, right, you're not getting your money back because you slagged us off on social media now. You know, dem are the rules. And it just seemed all a bit flaky and wishy-washy. I mean, I wouldn't dismiss the concept out of hand, because, you know, people get militant and reticent against anything that's not like the traditions of eating a pie and standing on a terrace. But football will evolve, and maybe some kind of variation or mutation of this scheme might be a goer in the future. But this one seems a bit shonky. It appears to be shonky, shall we say.
I think it's maybe someone who had quite a good idea and hasn't executed it very well, but I'm sure somebody may come along and do the same thing better.
Yeah, I mean, it's been done before with Ebblesfleet. Yeah, there is a bit of short-termism where you get that money up front and there's a track record of him disappearing from companies. So we'll see how that one plays out. But speaking of getting rid of somebody shady or who has let down a football club, number three.
The Oyston reign at Blackpool is over, and with it, the Blackpool fans who've been boycotting the club for, I think it's around 4 years and over 200 games have finally returned to Bloomfield Road for their game against Southend this weekend. So before this weekend, I think they were averaging about 4,000 and 15,000 hearty seaside souls decided to turn up and cheer their team on to a 2-2 draw.
Can I just stop you there? Can I? Hearty seaside souls. I think I need to carry on.
How can you patronise a bunch of fans so much? They're still in like dark times. I mean, they're going into receivership. They're potentially facing massive points reduction.
Yeah, it's about a 12-point deduction, and Oyston's been ordered to pay $25 million to the co-chairman. So while it's a good position that he's not there, the fans want to go, the club as an entity is still very much in trouble.
Yeah, I think it's a symbolic silver lining.
Yeah, I think so.
So many clubs in distress, them, the Cov, Charlton. But Villa may be getting out of it. But first of all, though, the Scott Hogan touch count meter didn't end up playing in the Sheffield derby, but old Chris Wilder's rotation saw him start and play the full 90 minutes against Rotherham in Sheffield United's 2-0 win. Had a shot on target, wow. Didn't score. 90 minutes, how many touches did he have?
20.
Dan Rogers?
Five.
Ooh, who's the closest? 13 is the answer. I'll give you that one as a draw, though technically Chris wins it.
Hang on, how can it be a draw and Chris wins it? Hang on, what? Based on what?
That's like winning 0-0.
You make based on what? He got 13, Chris said 20, you said 5. Chris is 7 away, you're 8 away.
Okay.
Are my maths right, or are they right?
Well, at midnight, and given it's Scott Hogan, I concede the victory.
Yeah, but don't worry, there's no prize. Don't worry about it.
Dan, it's such a minor victory.
That's not even
I'm still losing. I'm still losing at life.
If only I was a hearty seaside soul.
Let's not waste time on this. But no. The bottom line is, it's not a Villa problem. This, if he's only touching the ball 13 times in a whole 90 minutes,
he's just not getting involved.
It's just not bothered, is he? He didn't like this football lark. He turns his back on it. The less he has to do to earn his money, the better.
Maybe he's just doing loads of dummies, you know, so he's trying to play like a real continental.
He hasn't got injured yet, though, which is huge news.
Yeah.
He's probably due an injury, isn't he, in the next couple of weeks?
I think, and that's why Wilder's like rotating him heavily. Anyway, on to the Blues game. We'll keep our tabs on Mr. Hogan and see. I think 13, that's probably his season's best, to be honest. But anyway, on to the Blues game. Again, kind of similar to the last couple of trips there, although obviously they ended in draws. It was scrappy, bitty, but there was an extra script through line, obviously, with what happened to Grealish straight away, which let's get on to that. I mean, there's a couple of incidents. There's the goal celebration where it all kicked off. I mean, we've just viewed an alternate video angle of it where you see the steward, he had a go at Grealish first, which obviously is one that's been doing the rounds. He had a go at Hourihan. Mings,
it's physical,
wanted to,
though. It's not just having a go. It's a real physical altercation.
Then he had a bit of afters with Mings.
Big mistake. Bad mistake.
Bad mistake. And the steward pushing Mings off. I think he pushed Mings and fell over just from, when you're trying to push Mings, you just rebound off him. And that's what happens to the steward. Then he got up again just to kind of try to assert his authority.
Yes, he tried to style it out, didn't he?
Police officers' hats flying everywhere. I mean, what's going to happen there is they'll probably bring in a rule where if a player jumps into the crowd to celebrate, they get sent off or something, because that's what they'll probably do, is to avoid this, is to nip it in the bud. Where I think players celebrating with the crowd, I that's part of the romanticism of football for me.
Mm. We've had a couple of brilliant ones this year with Hutton and Grealish.
No, exactly. But let's go to the first incident. I mean, I'm watching it and you see him coming on the pitch, and then you see him come in and you're thinking, shit, nobody's intercepting this dude. Mm. And the bottom line is he fluffed his lines in terms of punching him.
I didn't expect you to be assessing. I know you're a boxing fan. Okay.
If he punched him clean, obviously Grealish doesn't see it coming because it's a cheap shot behind, from behind.
It is a and so he's, shot, isn't it?
You know, it's like Tyson Fury when he's getting hit by Deontay Wilder. He's seeing it. So in that split second, you prepare for the impact. So you tense yourself. But if you get hit without seeing it, then you're getting hit cold, so to speak. And he just kind of clips the bottom of his chin, hits him in the neck. And it's a bit of a mess, but enough to obviously, I think half of it, Grealish would have been startled by it because you're not expecting it. It's like, who's hitting you? What, the referee? Your teammate? What's going on? And, I tried to play devil's advocate and say, all Blues fans can't be that bad. But every time we play the Blues at St Andrews, they just let themselves down. I mean, it kind of adds to the spice of the occasion, but this is some fucking prick just ruining it for everybody. And if he had hit Grealish cleanly and say, put him in, in a position where he couldn't carry on, then if I was Dean Smith, I would have just walked the team off and just say, fuck you.
Yeah.
And basically say to the EFL, I want 3 points. And, they normally, what is it, a 3-0 victory they award you? And I'd have taken that. It's a bit windy to be playing anyway, to be honest. So if you can get any, if you can get an easy 3-0 win, get you the might goal, as well take
get
it.
Get the goal difference up.
Get the goal difference up.
And we'll take the clean sheet. Thank you very much.
But I think the main thing that saved that situation from flaring up, and we're also talking about potential inciting, I mean, you know, it's a hotbed anyway, was Grealish, just his behaviour. He was so cool, and that was the incident where you thought Grealish as captain, this was a, you know, it's a massive litmus test for him, even just as a player, but as a captain, he was spot on in every way there.
I mean, there's a great shot, isn't there, of him when there's all chaos ensuing behind him, and he's just sat there laughing his socks off with a little wry smile.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the pictures of the day.
Well, that's the big irony of this, isn't it? That actually the guy, the complete idiot who ran on thinking he was Billy Big Balls doing what he did, you know, for what was a very scrappy game overall, and it you know, it wasn't much different, I suppose, after it. It gave Grealish absolute purpose in it, because Grealish was completely unfazed, I think, by it.
Yeah.
You know, which was remarkable. I think his lack of reaction was commendable. I don't know how much detail we want to go into talking about how and why these things shouldn't happen, but I don't, you know, from Villa, I think, have come out with a really strong statement to say why, you know, it is unacceptable, and I don't think it is an isolated issue for Blues. I think
Villa have come out of a statement. Do you mean Birmingham?
No. I was going to get to Blues' statement. Villa came out with a statement following Blues' apology, basically underlining that it's unprecedented, really, in English football. This happened to an outfield player, and that the way it happened as well, you know, that the fan gets on the pitch with such ease. And I have to say that there was a horrible couple of seconds where, probably like you just mentioned, I thought, you know, all the worst things come into your head, don't you? You know, Birmingham's got a worse knife crime issue than London. Yeah. And I think that the police have got some real critical analysis of this to do, because for me, you know, we've all been to St. Andrews a number of times where you do compromise on your civil liberties and other things. And you hear about, you know, almost like this high-fiving at the end of the Blues derby from West Midlands police. This was a real near miss. And I'm not in favour of things like the, you know, putting the fences back up and a completely disproportionate reaction. But they've got to deal with these things.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, there's mass punishments, closed doors, banning of all fans. You know, the media loves the incidents like this, because this is when they can go into their hyperbole where no logic is provided. I mean, first of all, you have to stress this is very rare. This actually happens. And normally it's on goalkeepers. I mean, obviously there's the Peter Enkelman one in 2002. An even worse one was the Leeds fan on Chris Kirkland. It was when he played for Sheffield Wednesday, 2012. There's a funny one, which I think I put in the notes as, what did I call it? The Gillingham bumming incident.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, if you go on YouTube, Gillingham goalkeeper, put in Gillian goalkeeper attack 2013. As you see a goalkeeper about to take a goal kick, and he bends down, and then suddenly this kid out of nowhere, was he like 12, 13, just like jumps on his back and knocks him over.
It's, if there's a similarity to Grealish, it's an unprovoked attack from behind with a difference. Suffice to say, didn't see it coming.
He didn't see it coming, but it's a bit of a, and the goalkeeper's reaction is one of bewilderment as he loses his anal virginity. but it's more Benny Hill. But obviously the Grealish one was a nasty kind of undertone to it.
And I think there's a statement from Blues out there, a statement from Monk, and there's no getting away from the fact that thousands and thousands and thousands of Blues fans applauded what happened.
Yeah, but I can see that as a tribal thing. Like, if this happened at Villa Park, would it, you know, you would get certain Villa fans would be applauding it as well.
I don't know. And this is where...
I mean, there's this, everybody always says their fan group is as holy as thou. But, you know, we were talking about the toxicity in the last episode and what people do. And I'm not saying that Aston Villa fans are like bloody, you know, Mother Teresa's minions at all. So there is that tribal thing. But also, obviously, you've got to look at, there's a lot of Blues fans that can't believe what happened. And, you know, they were not happy at all with their own fan for doing it. So in terms of, I think you throw the book at the individual. As we said, normally it's goalkeepers, because they're in close proximity to the touchline, obviously. And then you understand why that happens. But it's also something that can be controlled a bit more. But this one, I mean, stewards, stewarding, Birmingham have got to look at themselves as a club, because A, normally their fans in recent years have topped the arrest tables, but this is the second time in this fixture this has happened. A fan has come on the pitch and punched a Villa player. So they have to look at their security. I mean, this isn't something that's going to be decided next week.
I just think it's the casual nature that the guy, he, not only does he get on the pitch at a, you know, really innocuous moment of the game, but he gets right up to, well, he does what he does. And, you know, before the steward even gets there, you know, a number of players, and I have to say Whelan and Mings basically stop the guy getting lynched anyway. They do a remarkable job because all hell broke loose.
Horahan wanted to take him out. And, you know, people, we were talking about the, you know, the Irish racism to them when they were having what was perceived as poor games, people calling them Irish this and Irish that. But hello, who was up there, the first to step up? It was Whelan and Horahan. And then later on in the celebration, when that steward was having a go at the Grealish, Horahan was right in there and wanted to deal with the steward.
I think with the Blues fan is that there were comparisons after the game online from Blues fans throwing it back at Villa going, oh, well, you know, what happened with your fan with Robbie Savage? And obviously there was no contact involved. But the context of the game was that Villa were 2-0 down. I think they'd just gone down to like 9 men. And that the whole ground was exploding around them. And then a fan's come on in the heat of the moment. This is 9 minutes into a game that's had no incident. So they can't say that that isn't a premeditated thing. He's not acting in the heat of the moment. That is a right. If I get a chance, I'm going to have a crack at him.
Yeah. This is somebody who wants to be, he wants to be the insta famous.
He wants to be the hero on the terrace, doesn't he? He's thinking, well, I know I'm going to get caught. I know I'm not going to get away with it, but I get to be the hero here. And unfortunately, the culture around the Blues means, unfortunately, he will be, because he will be lauded by their supporters and he'll have his picture on fucking T-shirts and those stupid little key rings they have when they have a day out in London and all this nonsense like the Paul Tate T-shirt. And this will be one of those trophies in their fucking cabinet.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tedious attitude for them to have. I mean, I'm getting increasingly bored of the idiots of this world and, and you know, this guy's going to get what's coming to him. And, you know, he might have to move out of Birmingham as well because, you know, everybody knows his face. So you'll get the book thrown at him and life's not going to be good for him from now on just for one act of being a knobhead, really.
No, and then obviously, and then it comes down to do the wider authorities decide that actually, do you know what, we need to make an example of the club. That's where it gets interesting.
And it's how far it spills because we got to remember, as I said, it, you know, things like this don't happen very frequently at all. Arrest rates are going down, et cetera, et cetera. Behaviour on the whole is you know, has been better than it has for years. So you might get into a situation why this idiot suddenly provokes the authorities to start thinking, oh, we'll have, you know, we need to raise the barriers around, and then suddenly the, you know, fans start to get a bit more distance from the actual game and, you know, more liberties are taken away in whatever form. The treatment and the freedom within a stadium to watch a game becomes less and less when obviously we've been trying to get it to go the other way and, you know, be more like Germany where you can actually drink at your seat and, you know, actually enjoy the game. But it's just, you just need one or two idiots to spark the scaremongers, the bureaucrats into taking away everybody's enjoyment. And, you know, this is even to the smaller extent if suddenly they start to do mass punishment for Blues fans and barring them. I think the club have to take responsibility, and obviously they, you know, there's potential for fines there and even worse. So the upshot is I think the EFL and FA, and I think they've got to focus it more on the club because obviously there's previous there, rather than it be a football issue, if you know what I mean, and it be this widespread thing, and then suddenly, oh, you know, standing stadiums, and well, I think we should put that on ice. No. And
it's definitely a club issue. I mean, you know, there was the missiles incident last year, and every time we play the guys, there's always something.
Yeah, I mean, the game at Villa normally goes off without much trouble, so we get it right. But when it comes to the Blues, I mean, they only just gave the green light to let fans out. You know, change the gate that they let fans out just so we can let fans out without actually holding them back for, which obviously was 90 minutes last year. So I don't think they're the most enlightened people who work there. You know, I go to these this independent advisory group for the West Midlands Police football unit, and, you know, they're having incidents with stewards and problems for, you know, a lot of matches. We've seen the video footage or whatever. So they've got to get their act in order and, you know,
But there's two parts to this for me, and I'll be very, very quick. That I think it's a proportionality thing, and I think that, you know, that the guy will, on a personal level, he'll get, you know, he's going to get time for this, and rightly so. But, you know, and that spears out for me in a couple of different ways. That clubs over recent seasons have outsourced their stewarding. It's become poor. We had issues at Villa. That's got to be addressed. You need proper, decent stewarding who understand the fans and the issues and whatever. You can't have old men sat on bloody fold down chairs by the side of the pitch watching shit go down around them. Old men punching players. The final thing I'd say is that they do need to make examples of clubs. They absolutely have to. That if this happens at Aston Villa, it happens at Birmingham City, it needs to happen. It doesn't mean that football's breaking down, but there are dickheads at every club. And I think that even in the afternoon after the second City derby, we saw some idiot run on at the Emirates. And we do need to start making examples. It can't become the norm, because I do. Yeah. I think that the police, you know, you mentioned rightly some of the meetings you've been to. And, it, you know, we've joked about the real things that they're doing, like the laughable things of deploying military grade drones. They're preoccupied with this thing that, you know, they just need to get back to basic policing and dealing with the idiots who are intent on disrupting the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he got as far on the pitch as possible, and that suggests that there isn't an eagle eye on these
exactly
things.
I mean, how do they frigging miss that? That's because they're preoccupied with pointing cameras at innocent citizens sat watching the game.
Indeed.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, let's move on from the nastiness to what it sparked. And I think it gave the game purpose all of a sudden, because we needed to win to have any chance of even thinking about the playoffs. But, you know, you're going into that game and a lot of Villa fans are saying, oh, you know, well, I'll take a draw because there's a fear of just they don't want to lose to the Blues. While if we were to have any purpose this season, we had to beat them. And then suddenly this incident kicks off and then you think, right, we really have to beat them now, because that's the only way we want to leave this game, is we want justice and we want karma as well.
Absolutely. And I think even from just the footballing point of view, and we were on the other side of this last year in the playoff final, that football had to be the winner in the end. And it was great that ultimately the one or two moments of real quality came from Villa, and that they scored and they hit the bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Al Ghazi chance in the first half was a cracking bit of play that will probably go quite unmissed in the you know, in the narrative of the game, but it was a fantastic piece of approach play in which Al Ghazi should have buried it.
Yeah, well, Grealish actually created two very good chances, because obviously after the El Ghazi one in the second half, there was the green one as well.
Yeah, and Abraham had one as well, didn't he?
Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted, just before we go on, I just wanted to say one thing about the Grealish thing. I went to the Aston Villa fan consultation group meeting, and one of the sections we discussed was about Aston Villa's recent media, social media, and sometimes it's quite infantile, and sometimes it's kind of embarrassing in terms of the stature of the club. And we've had this discussion with actual Christian Purslow in a previous meeting, I think back in November, and you know, he agreed, and on, you know, most of the issues in terms of the tone, and he actually employs somebody now to overlook the tone of both the marketing and the kind of commercial side of things. And you know, I was saying, well, you know, this, the hype of Grealish was so much, as we obviously alluded to in the last episode, that there are potential negative effects of this, and it can get a bit reckless. For example, Fabian Delph's situation, where they used it really as a PR exercise. Villa weren't doing very well. They announced this new contract, Fabian Delph, and we all knew what happened then. It was essentially, that was just to get, you know, 8 million in the bank, and he was always going to potentially leave in the summer if anybody came along with that ridiculously low release clause. And so that builds up bad blood. I mean, Fabian Delph, I mean, he's obviously got total bad blood against him. So Grealish, what happens if Grealish suddenly walks out the door? But what also you're doing, you're hyping in Birmingham, you're hyping this player, hyping this player. So of course the opposition fans are going to hate him even more. And that may trigger something like this. I mean, it's not an excuse for it, but what I'm just saying is that there are kind of repercussions for certain actions.
I mean, especially when Monk came out, you know, very openly before the game, saying, oh, you know, we won't be targeting Jack Grealish. And within, what, 3 minutes, Keith Dunbell had snapped him in half. It's like...
Yeah.
It was like a repeat of the first game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Grealish did well. I mean, I thought a great decision by Dean Smith was to take him off after 80 minutes. A, with the view that obviously the Forest game is as important as this. Yeah. I mean, at the time I was hoping he wasn't injured, but... I think on reflection, it was just basically where he had 70 minutes against Derby, 80 minutes here. Mm. He's still building him up. But it was also a good time to... It also took the sting out of the game a little bit as well, because it gave... it took away the focal point from the Blues fans as, you know, as their point of hatred.
Mm. Yeah, and I think Grealish said after the game, didn't he, that he was cramping up a little bit. So it was the right thing to do, just to get fresh legs on and sort of, you know, manage the game. And we've used that phrase numerous times all season, the lack of game management. And actually, Villa's against Birmingham was great, that whenever they had the opportunity to actually just take their time and sort of take the sting out of the game, and the Blues were more than happy to let Mings and Howes at the back just have the ball on the back line. They didn't actually pressure the ball, which I really thought Blues would press Villa quite hard, and they just didn't.
We discussed in the last podcast about what his midfield setup would be, and I think we were comfortable with a potential couple of permutations. I mean, I was comfortable with this idea of playing the same midfield that we had against Derby, because there was good balance there, and Whelan had a great game. Horahan was getting forward and being a danger. And then what you do have is, after an hour or so, you have a chance to bring on John McGinn, who's obviously super, you know, energized Duracell bunny type of player, who when the opposition is tiring, completely changes the dynamic of the game. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. I mean, he provided the lead up to the goal after the, you know, before the assist from Taylor to Grealish to obviously put slot at home. Grealish, using his brain, realizing it was very windy, so he decided to go for the grass cutter. Good selection of shot.
McGinn was you could see it through the first half and leading up to it. You just thought, this game is crying out for him to just come on and drive us up the field, which is exactly what he did. You could tell he'd had the 2 week break, and you could tell he'd have obviously been A, fresh, B, frustrated to not be on the field and not start the game. He had the look of a player who really had something to prove, you know, because for him, who's been probably our most consistent player all season, to not start one of the biggest games of the season because you've been out of the team. It just so happens the game before that team won 4-0. But he would have been frustrated. But he didn't sulk. He just came on and took the game to Blues, and he ran through them, which is something we've thrown at happening to Villa too many times this year. And actually, once McGinn came on and gave us the drive, all of a sudden, Horahan looked a completely different player in that game. And he became a threat and much more controlled, sort of sitting back in the pocket and just distributing the ball.
Yeah, no, I was confident we were for the win when both Green and McGinn came on, because Green was exactly what we needed, also that kind of directness at the time. And he, you know, was very unfortunate not to get the opener. I mean, obviously, we're talking about Villa here, but there was a bit of pressure from the Blues. And that was, I don't think anybody didn't feel nervous towards the end there, because there was that feeling where you did feel it was coming. And Gardner, I mean, missed two great chances.
For me.
The first one is an awful miss.
Yeah.
And if you could choose anybody to have those missing two sitters, it would be him.
Oh, he did a great defensive job for us.
Yeah,
yes, definitely Agent Gardner. Do you know what it said to me? And it's not this isn't a criticism of McGinn, because he came on and he, as you've rightly said, he created, got that fantastic looping ball across to Taylor for the goal. And I also, just a final comment on McGinn, is that he has this fantastic crab-like ability to hold the ball when it seems impossible that he will hold the ball, and that's brilliant. But what it did show, I thought, is how important Whelan was, because the second that he was gone as that anchor in front of the defence, we did look a little bit more vulnerable.
I'm sorry, but you can't use the description crab without paying Stylian Petrov a royalty.
Or Ashley Westwood.
Who scored his first goal for Burnley.
Yes, for Burnley.
That's a new, isn't that a new feature after the Scott Hogan touch count? We have the Ashley Westwood goal count. New and exciting feature.
Yeah, well, that was the first goal he ever scored for Burnley. So maybe the next time... The Ashley Westwood goal count, probably about three seasons away.
The Ashley Westwood golden boot, we'll have that.
Yeah.
What I thought was that was the only, I mean, they were shocking misses. The one he manages to sky over the bar, I thought, oh, that's, it felt like that would be the moment. But then when he had the header at the death, that he bulleted past the post, that was when I thought, well, if he's not going to score that, then I think we'll be okay. But we missed Whelan in the final stages.
But I also think that Mings got us over the line there big time.
He was immense. Absolutely.
I mean, really, Grealish obviously takes the headlines for everything that goes on, but on a purely footballing perspective, Mings was the best player on the field by a country mile at St Andrews. He was superb. It was honestly, I would go as far as to say it's one of the best defensive performances I've seen from Villa in the best part of a decade. I can't think of a better performance.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Considering we haven't bothered defending for a decade.
I'd compare it to the era of kind of Melberg and Larsson.
Wow.
I thought he was that dominant. Especially when you compare, like, in all fairness to...
Larsson only played about 9 games.
No, really. You know I Melbourne. Like Larsson. You always roll this statistic out. I imagine he played hundreds of games.
And what I'd say, to big Mings up is, he came up against, Jukovic. He was a unit as well.
He played well, I thought, Jukovic. Yeah, he was a good player, actually.
And him and Che Adams are probably the best pairing in the league, really, because everyone else plays with one.
I thought Adams worked really hard to essentially fashion his own chances. You almost felt sorry for him because he was trying.
The thing that I think Blues really lacked, and not in a Gary Gardner sense, but the fact that Villa had a creative midfielder who you always felt, we can make something happen. Yeah. Blues, you kind of felt that this is going to be a set piece or a mistake or a worldie, but they're not going to fashion a well-crafted goal.
They come across as a kind of a blue-collar midfielder, but, Jota is there, but hotter, but he just didn't really have any footprint on the game.
Whenever I've seen him play for Blues, I've just thought, wow, Brentford got an amazing deal.
Because as they did with Scott Hogan.
They did, because I just think he's tricks and flicks, but he's so ineffective. Mm. Considering he was up against Neil Taylor, who, with all due respect, his form has been patchy, you would have thought Blues would have targeted him. And they kind of didn't.
Do you know what I thought, just to pick up on what you were saying about Mings, is that, and with you mentioning Taylor, is that Mings has this amazing ability to, he covers almost two-thirds of that defensive side, because, he nipped in and helped House out a couple of times. But he was often in the left-back position. You think, well, where is Neil Taylor? Mings would be there, and he quite likes, he's very comfortable on the ball, and there was times where he was very deep with the ball under pressure. He's very comfortable turning or playing.
He did some, he got in positions where you shouldn't really be going as a centre-back, just to turn the player, just to
opens
beat him.
Opens the space up, doesn't it? And there was a couple of times, as has been in many games, where you can see him barracking the midfield for lack of movement. That's what I want to see, actually, that, because he seems capable and willing to play out from the back. It's not always a refined ball out, but it's a bit more unorthodox, isn't it? And that's... I like it.
I mean, we'll talk about it more after the Forest game, but if we win that, then suddenly we're in this winner takes all. It's kind of like a double or quit type scenario, where I think double and quits is probably the best description, where we could potentially be in a position to properly challenge for the playoffs. And then once we're in the playoffs, I think we're definitely going to fucking win him, or we're going for it, put it that way.
Well, it's shit or bust,
after coming from nowhere, we're not just making up the numbers in the playoffs. The double of quits is, the double is we'll get promoted. The quits is, if we don't make it, then we would have had this renaissance where Grealish is impressed and Mings is impressed, but they've not got us over the line, but they've impressed the shop window, and Mings will be snapped up by a Premier League team, no problem, because he's shown himself to be at that level without a doubt. Yeah. And Grealish has finally proven his worth, and he'll be off as well. So we're walking that dangerous line, but I'd rather go for it and beat Forest and then see where we go from there.
Just looking at the table again, examining it as you're doing, you're thinking, well, after, you know, with Forest on the horizon and Middlesbrough, and you look at the teams, and I think the top three are decent teams. The Albion are doing their best to self-implode. Middlesbrough, I thought, we looked very good when we went up there. Derby, obviously, we dispatched. Bristol City and Forest, come on. If we can't get ourselves organised in the last eight games of the season, and as you say, we might as well kitchen sink it.
You're falling into the trap there. I think you just take it one game at a time. We've got to beat Forest and then we can carry on the conversation. You can look at these teams and go, oh, well, we beat them, we played well. It means nothing because we know about Villa. And if we haven't learnt about how Villa can implode so easily.
I'm not dismissing that we can't implode. And that's been my frustration as I've been banging on this, on the website and on this podcast for years, is our inability to go on long winning runs. You know, Bristol City, I know they're on a losing streak, I suppose, now, but they put together, what, 8-9 victories, was it?
Yeah,
eight
victories. You know, Villa have never done that. And I think
and that's what we'll need, essentially, to get up.
We will need it. And I think we were saying a couple of weeks ago that it would be remarkable, or actually, what did we say? A miracle, I think, was the word that someone used.
But looking at it, I mean, we're repeating what we said at the end of last show, but looking at it, if we beat Forest, then suddenly, and obviously beat Borough, just put that one in for Chris Budd, then...
And with Bristol to come.
We're going too far. Before the international break, we'll actually be in the mix now. We'll only be, like, potentially 3 points off. So you're in the running there, and it doesn't matter how many games are left. There's enough games for, you know, an ebb and flow to happen. You're at the races, what I'm saying. Mm. But you're not going to need that 75 points that Derby needed last season to finish sixth. This season will be a little lower, and that's why we've got a chance. I mean, look at what's happened. There was four teams in those outside the playoff situations after Villa beat Derby. There was Aston Villa, Birmingham, Hull, Forest. In those teams that were potentially good enough to get in the playoffs, as fate would have it, they were playing each other in like some kind of mini tournament. Mm. Forest played Hull, Villa played Blues, Villa beat Blues, Forest dispatched Hull 3-0. Now Villa are playing Forest. If we beat them, then I think we're a legit playoff contender again.
Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to that game, actually.
Yeah, and we have to approach it with the same intensity as we did in the Blues, because if we do this beat Wolves 4-1 routine and then fuck up the next game straight away, then the midweek game straight after, then we don't go anywhere. So beat Forest, and then there's a statement of intent, and you've got a bit of belief in the tank as well, and who knows what could happen. Just a couple of things on the game. Tommy Elphick in the away end. I think Callum Robinson was in there as well as some Villa coaching staff that I spotted. I don't know where they got their... are they part of their Villa away scheme?
Are they part of the park?
Part of the park? Have they got enough matches on their record?
I think they were stewarding, weren't they?
Yeah, potentially. That's how we had to get into games now.
There is a great shot of Elphick, isn't there, celebrating the goal. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, no, it's spot on. I think we've discussed briefly there where we want to be before the international break. Mm. And I think you just got to say beat Forest, beat Borough. And then we go into the international break knowing that Smith can ready his troops because we're in a playoff battle. And potentially Tuan Zebe will be creeping back. I don't know what the situation is with James Chester. As I said in a previous show, back at Christmas, it was thought on the grapevine that he would need an operation that would take him out for most of the season, if not all the season. Mm. And it's one of those where they thought, well, obviously he had to play on because we didn't have any cover. And it's one of those things where you can kind of manage week to week. So I don't know if he's... we will see him again. Elphick will be back mid-April, but I think the main work in terms of playoffs is this coming week. I would throw that one out there.
Yeah, I think, you know, by this time next week, as it were, I think you'll have a, you know, post-Bury, you'll have an idea of where we could or could not be.
It's suddenly exciting again.
Yeah, it is. Potentially.
And a sense, a bit like the run of games we had in sort of November, December, there's a real sense of a difficult run of games, but what an opportunity. Absolutely. Rather than what a difficult run of games and it's going to be depressing. I think everyone feels a sense of positivity and a sense of maybe there's a bit of momentum here again.
Yeah.
Might sound quite dismissive of what's actually happened, but we're actually doing what we should be doing. You know, we should be approaching games in this way of trying to win them. And major part of, as we've said over.
Well, the Jack Grealish show has come along and rescued us.
We joke, but you know, when we were.
I'm not joking. I'm being serious.
No. But the, my point was before, in the 2 or 3 months he was off, we weren't sure whether it was the Jack Grealish show. But I think how pivotal he is to us turning things around and actually, you know, looking just two games forward, that it's become possible again. And he's got something very, very special that...
Well, if we beat Forest, it will be.
No, exactly. But I think that without him, I think that we're contemplating something different, because we're going into that game now considering something that was even just 2 games ago impossible is now possible.
With the players we've got, I think that they will be confident that they will feel that they're getting their shit together. And we've and how long have we been saying that? That if they get their shit together, they'll be fine. But it says so, and we've discussed this so many times, that it says so much about the rest of the league as to how bad Villa have been at times this season. Yeah. And to be 4 points off the playoffs after the, 2 wins in 15, says probably more about the rest of the league than it says about Villa.
But it also says a lot about us as well, because we haven't taken advantage of this situation. Completely.
But the fact that we're still in with a shout,
it's remarkable, right?
And have momentum is kind of like, wow. You know, because as you said earlier, you know, you look at Leeds and Norwich and they're pulling away. Sheffield United are a tidy team. But I don't fear anyone in the league, and I'm sure the players and the manager, they definitely won't.
Yeah, you could say to me, like 15 games, I think we've won, before this one, we'd like won 3 in 15 or something. You could have said to me, oh, Villa have won 7 out of the last 15 in the Championship, and I'd say to you, that's just not good enough. But if we had won 7 out of the last 15, we'd probably be in the playoffs now and looking good. And we've always said this, it doesn't take that much to... get in the playoffs and triumph in this league. You just need to get your act together to get in the top two.
I mean, we're defensively looking more like a team finally.
Yeah.
And attacking wise, we're always going to score goals.
The bottom line is, in terms of the whole, and the stars are starting to align, and the final thing that needs to happen really is for Norwich and Leeds to romp home in the automatics, leaving our final 2 games against those two teams
Dead rubbers for them.
Anyway, it's time to get out of here. Enough of the Jack Grealish show. I mean, we can start talking about Crufts now if you'd like, but I think it's time to get the hell out of here and call it a day. The next show will be after the Middlesbrough game. So please do follow us on Spotify and iTunes and all the other apps that you use, just so you get the first heads up to when the show drops. Also, become a patron on myoldmansaid.com/patron to check out the details there to help us carry on the show. Anyway, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Grealish again. You'll see that. Horan!
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.